Hey guys, welcome. How did Unified Sounds get started? And what made you guys want to join forces?
Right. Well, Steve actually created Unified Sounds before I joined forces with him, but we had done so many projects together already at that point that we noticed when we compose on our own, it sounds pretty cool, but when we joined forces, it just sounded better. And the quality of our work started increasing the more that we worked together. So we decided to make it official. And then we started taking on other writers that we knew that could also make us even stronger. And so now we've been jamming ever since.
Nice. Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well. Yeah, I mean, the collaboration thing, it was probably like 2 years in the making, you know, on and off. You know, some projects were good at first. And it's just like anything. You have to kind of work at it to really find that happy medium and that synergy, that dreaded word, buzzword. But, I mean, we totally did. Especially in the last couple of years or several years, when we started doing some art projects, stuff where we got to think outside the box a little bit more, we really complemented each other's strengths and
right.
Better together.
Sounds like a natural collaboration.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Who or what has been your greatest inspiration career-wise?
That question can go back 1,000 years, but I always jump to Beethoven, even though it's cliche, it doesn't matter. He's still my biggest inspiration. There's just too many to list really, as far as, artists that I look up to. I think it really varies depending on the project that I'm looking at. Like lately I've been listening to a lot of position music or Audio Machine, a lot of trailer track music, and that stuff really speaks to me on a high level lately, especially in the production wise, because their compositions are really strong, production levels are really strong, and that's kind of the new thing. It's not just about producing, it's not just about composing anymore. All of these skills have to be top and they have to be burning at a high level equally. And so it really, composers before this generation really were only strong in one or the other, but nowadays you have to be strong at both. So I think the sounds that are coming from those avenues are really inspiring me lately. Steve, you want to jump on that?
Yeah, no, that's totally, I was going to say in the beginning, the early years, it was always John Williams that, I just loved his music and watched every one of, any movie that he was involved in, usually Spielberg or Lucas, 1,000 times growing up. So it was always in my brain, his use of melody and harmony. But I think later, maybe in my formative years or high school years, early college, it started becoming Trent Reznor after a while. I was really intrigued by the way he uses electronic instruments as well as organic stuff that he started playing with in his later his later albums, and he's a film composer now. it kind of went full circle, but to pin it on one composer it changes with the season, it changes with the project, and there's so many in the world of game and film and everything else. It'd be hard to list everyone.
Fantastic, guys. What advice would you give to somebody just starting out in their career and they wanted to follow a similar career path?
I think part of the other side of my career is teaching. And what I always tell my students is there are three things that they have to master: musicianship, technology skills, and people skills. No school really teaches the three of them equally. And that's a shame, because your people skills have to be just as strong as your musical skills and your technical skills. You can be the best composer in the world with the best musical chops in the world, but if you can't talk to other people, you're just going to fail. You know, so it's a matter of how do you work with other people? How can you compromise with integrity? And that's the thing that's going to serve you the best. So, of course, practice your instrument, learn computers, but really practice hanging out with people, because that's what's going to bring you to the next gig more than anything, really.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to top. It kind of sums up my whole... My old spiel, the collaboration is a huge part of what we do, especially at the higher levels or the bigger gigs, something like Farpoint, when there are so many people working together up and down the production chain. you know, everywhere from the director, the graphics guys, the producer, and then the music team, the music implementation team. You know, everybody's got an opinion, and you know, they can put their thumbprint on that work. And so yeah, creatively, you know, getting over yourself and getting over your ego first and foremost, you know, shed it. I think Danny and I were lucky in that we had Berkeley, or at least for Berkeley for me was when that skin was shed like a snake. I mean, the ego was stripped away, smashed to bits, and then we had to rebuild it because you're just around some of the best in the business,
right,
while you're in school.
Yeah.
I think it's important just to shed that first. And then the skills, the writing, the music, if it's your love, it's going to come easy regardless.
Yeah.
Right. It's passion.
They used to call it the Berkeley Blues.
Oh yeah.
You get there and you're coming from you were the best in your town. Right. And then you get to Berkeley, you're like, oh man, everybody here was the best in their town. Their towns were bigger than mine.
Right. It's a little bit humbling.
Yeah.
It makes you work a little harder. Fantastic, guys. What are some of your favorite projects of note that you've worked on in the past?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to lead with Farpoint. It's just the coolest project I ever did. It's just a happy marriage of the sound design, technical stuff, and musical stuff, and the fact that it was collaborative. It just brings me back to those 3 points I said about before. So it was just a great way to really stretch out and explore new worlds. And the fact that it was VR, everything was brand new. You know, this is stuff that nobody really did yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just really got to explore it. It was just a blast. Steve, I'm sure you're going to probably say the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've had anything close to that experience. It's, there have been films in the past that have really pushed me, and not just scoring, but doing sound design and the mix and all that. But with Farpoint, we were, you know, like a part of the World Builders Club. You know, we were helping them design the aesthetic sonically of this this alien landscape, and I don't think we really had the chance to do anything like that in prior projects, and that was the most exciting. It's just, okay, what does this world sound like musically, and how can we best represent it?
Right.
And not to mention all the fun, crazy technical hurdles that were thrown our way we both love the challenge, right? When there's something new and we don't know how to do it, or learn it now, you know? And there was a lot of that, which was always rewarding.
Yeah, with VR being such an emerging, growing industry, maturing now, it's good to get that insight of working with a company like that early on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What are the most difficult projects you've worked on, and what made it hard to complete?
You know, I don't know if that's a hard question, because if you let any project can become a really difficult one if you let it. I think it's a mindset that media composers have to put on, and that we're supportive in this side of the industry. We're not making albums, you know, we're supporting someone else's vision. So that being said, every project could be difficult because you have to figure out what the client wants. In this case, we had to figure out what the game developers wanted and what Sony wanted. For Farpoint. And so that could be difficult if you let your own ego get in the way, basically. You know, you might have a different idea of what that sound should be, and if they don't agree with it, doesn't matter. You know, you're going to get boot. So that could be difficult. But I think that Steve and I have done so many projects leading up to that it wasn't really that difficult because we just understood that. I guess we could back up a couple of years, some of the stuff that we've done for other things. Seemed a little difficult because we didn't quite have our heads wrapped around that aspect of the industry yet. But I think we've got enough scars that we've gotten past that point in our careers. Steve, you wanna?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's funny. The bigger the project, the easier it can get. You know,
it's true.
Dealing with higher level professionals.
Yeah, I mean, I think back like 10, more than 10 years ago, I did this little film called Andre the Butcher.
Right.
Go look it up. Well, actually, it turned into a kind of a cult classic horror thing. Anyway, it was it was low budget, but it had a lot of spark, a lot of life. It was super funny, hilarious movie by Phil Cruz, amazing director who was working out of Florida. And he hired me and this other guy, Lee Riley, to do everything in terms of sound and editing and music cues for a full feature length horror movie. And the amount of work, we just didn't know, right?
Right.
You walked into that much work. If I could teleport back to that time, I don't care what I was getting paid, I would have just given it to other people to bring them on board to have a bigger team to tackle something like that. It's, you know, when you do have that self-centric mindset and you want to do everything yourself, you can make the easiest projects incredibly difficult on yourself. And I don't know, that was a lesson learned right then. I think it was right after that where I'm like, okay, we need more people. Yeah.
Very good. A lot of people approach the creative process a little differently. What is your creative process like?
There's been so many different processes that I've been through personally. But I think that when I work with Steve, our best approach is when we're sitting in a room together, throwing spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks. Mm-hmm. That's the best. And that, to get specific, we usually just kind of work something out. Sometimes it's on an acoustic piano before we get in the studio. But then when we're in there, we'll explore together. And then we give each other a little bit of space. I'll give Steve an hour. And then I'll jump on and move his spaghetti around for an hour. And then he'll come back and we'll keep swapping out until it just becomes like the lump of clay starts to take shape.
Right.
And then at that point, we'll usually send the files back and forth. So I think... Yeah, that it's always changing. It depends on the project, but that's really, I think, the most effective approach.
Okay.
I've seen recently. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, doing Farpoint kind of brought me back to the band years, rock bands, and writing, you know, rock songs with five guys in the room, and it's a lot of fun. It's super collaborative, and you get like more of a high when everyone else is getting the same high off of something like, ooh, that's it. Yeah, that's it. And you have validation. It also helps you get out of your head, right? Because it's so easy to rabbit hole on something that's could very well be mediocre. And you're polishing the heck out of it.
Yeah.
But you don't have anyone around you to say, hey, you know what? You just spent 2 hours on that bell that is going to get cut from the mix anyway. Let's move on. I love it. Yeah. When we're in the same room, it's definitely awesome. But we're at this point in our collaboration and our careers where, you know, there's no ego. It's like, okay, if something sucks, we probably agree.
Right.
I didn't think about it that way. Let's change it.
Yeah.
Right.
Steve, I remember at one point we were working on a cue and you went downstairs and you gave me some space and I was jamming for about 2 hours. And I rabbit holed completely, and I turned around and you were there, and you just kind of shook your head no, and I just went right to the computer and deleted the whole thing.
Yeah,
I got to.
Sounds like you're more in tune with each other now from working.
Yeah.
I mean, because you know what's good, it eventually, and sometimes, you know, that is going to give you the right criticism that you need to bring it to the next level.
Constructively.
Yeah, it's a process.
Yeah. All progress is. Okay, so what are some, are there any new innovations, I should say, in your field that has made working with your compositions and sounds easier?
I think the one thing that made it all easier is faster computers, because that leads to everything. When I first started, I was barely using a computer. I was using tape machines and stuff. And then as computers got faster and faster, I can record more on them. And now it's just, I can't believe the stuff I could do now compared to what I was doing in the 90s. It's just, it's ripping fast, you know, and relatively speaking, I don't have to spend as much money on computers as I used to, right? But they're just better. And I think that's the one simple trick to it. Better computers, better computers.
Yeah, I agree with that to an extent. I wholeheartedly agree. I worked in the software industry for a while and did, you know, was constantly working on PCs that were crashing every second. And it was the most frustrating thing to try to get in the creative zone and then beep, DLL error, crash, you know, so whatever. But yeah, now, I mean, now that we have big boy systems, it's great. The workflow is so much faster. But there's also the lack of, there's unlimited options when it comes to the creative process now. Like, we can pretty much put down unlimited amount of tracks.
Right.
Nothing is destructive. Nothing is undoable. Like, you can always undo a mistake. Nothing is really committed. And I think finding new ways to force yourself to commit, which we do all the time when we're working together, we're like, screw it, let's commit, let's flatten this and move on and not look back. Mm-hmm. Let's pretend like this is tape and we can't erase it. I think although computers have been by far the biggest advantage in our work, it's also a disadvantage in some ways.
Totally. Yeah.
So from my understanding, you guys both live a distance away. How do you work together remotely?
Right. Well, Steve just moved away recently. And I think we still... Now it's a matter of sending files back and forth. The one thing that would be missing is starting a project in the same room. But for bigger projects, I'm going to fly to his house.
Yeah.
And for smaller projects, you know, I'll start something and send it to him, and then he'll send it back. And so for the really fun, exciting ones, it'll be like it was when he was in Orlando. It's not that far away.
Well, right. The next thing, I really want to try doing a Skype writing session. I've done a few of those, and they can be pretty good at times. Yeah. They can definitely work. But yeah, it's definitely not the same as being in the same room and distracted by the same stuff.
Like, right.
There's a dog outside the door barking or a kid running through the hall. we can make it work, and that's the beauty of this industry now, is you don't have to be tied down to a specific location, although it helps for FaceTime meetings,
right.
You know, getting out there and doing the hustle. Location is important, but when it comes to doing the work, not as much, I don't think.
Right. I mean, we speak together every day. We make a point of at least calling each other just to make sure we're on the same page, no matter what project we're doing. So I think we actually probably talk just as much as we did when we saw each other every day, you know, because we're constantly aware that there's a distance. And so we're taking care of it before it becomes a problem, you know,
right.
Because it could. If we don't speak to each other for days and days and days, and then a project comes in and we're not sure where the other one is on that project. So.
Yeah.
You know, I think communication is probably the key. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it helps you stay on point.
Absolutely.
So excitingly, I read that you were recently nominated for a Jerry Goldsmith Award for your work on Farpoint, getting back to that. And you also won a CSAC Network Television Composers Award. You want to tell me a little bit about your experience with those?
Sure. The Jerry Goldsmith one... we had to submit. We submitted a number of pieces, and the Farpoint one came to the front of the line. And so now, what's crazy, I think, is this is our first big game, and we were nominated immediately, which is kind of humbling and scary and awesome and cool at the same time.
Yeah. and the fact that it's in Spain.
No.
We have to get out there.
It speaks for your work.
Thanks. It's pretty awesome and unexpected, but we'll take it.
Yeah. Well, the CSAC award is all Danny. I mean, it is. Wow. It is from a joint project that we work on. But he did this one, maybe two golf tracks that just owned it. when was it? It was 2016
and into this year too. There's a good bunch of them that hit circulation pretty heavily. And so I remember we just had kids recently, twins, and I was putting together the cribs for them last summer, and I had golf on, and I just kept hearing the same five tracks over and over. So, man, this is pretty fun. So it's for golf, CBS Sports. So on the weekends, the CBS channel all across the country plays sports all weekend. And so that's our other second biggest gig that we have, is working for them, writing music for sports highlights, storytelling, anything to do with any of those shows. And so we've had pretty good success in the last 7 or 8 years with that gig. And it's just kind of ramping up. So now we're doing really well. We got to stay on top.
Yeah.
I mean, as a whole, as a house, I think we're really up there. And we have to thank Rob Astor, our publisher, who brought me onto it about 10 years ago-ish. I don't know, 2007. Yeah, 10 years. I know. And then that was one of the reasons why Unified was, born, is because we needed more music, more writers. And, brought in Danny, who was a juggernaut on this thing. And then we realized, we need more. a bigger team.
Yeah, the demand.
Yeah, the majority of stuff that you hear on CBS Golf is coming out of Rob Astor's house, which is kind of Unified Sounds and him combined at this point. We're doing a lot of really exciting joint ventures together. Fantastic.
Speaking of opportunities, how did you actually come across the opportunity to work on the Four Point Game, going back a little bit?
How did we come across Four Point? Right. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to let Steve take this one, because he's the one who brought me onto the Four Point.
Yeah. This goes back to Full Sail, where Danny and I were both working at the time. And one of the Full Sail alumni, who's kind of, a very respected VIP alumni, who is the senior music manager at Sony. And his name's Jonathan Mayer, not John Mayer, Jonathan. He's very specific about that. And he does master classes at Full Sail quite often. He'll fly in and do talks and just talk about the game industry and music within games. Super awesome guy. And, it was about maybe 5 years ago where I kind of became a fan after he did his first thing for us. And I was like, my God, this guy's mixes are insane. What is going on? What are we doing wrong? So I think it was, over the course of a few years, just chatting. And then there was one hangout where we really hit it off, where I picked his brains relentlessly and, kind of nudged the door open to where he would want to hear what we're doing. Like, oh, send me work. Send me what you're doing. Anytime you're doing a project, send it over. And there's probably a year of that. Mm-hmm. And eventually we got an opportunity to do a thing that we can't even talk about yet. And this is before Farpoint.
Yeah.
And this Sony project was a Unified Sounds project. And we brought in the whole team. We all went to work and, we got kind of used to their workflow and all the logistics involved. And I think it was our work on that project that gave us the opportunity to at least demo for Farpoint, which we did quickly. Mm-hmm. And I brought Danny in and we had like 4 or 5 days, something like that. We were bringing in instrumentalists.
Yeah.
And
fast, blurry.
It was a
very quick, turnaround.
The new answer.
And I think they appreciated that,
Yeah.
That's part of the game.
Yeah, I guess when you're dealing with that level of a studio, they need their information pretty quick.
Yeah.
So if you were to highlight your experience working at Sony Interactive and the Farpoint game, what was your favorite aspect of everything? What were some, did you have any interesting stories or highlights that you like to share?
I'll go quick and then I'll pass it to Steve. For me, it's just working with such a class company is amazing. And it was highlighted to me when we sent in some really good mixes. And then what they did it when they sent it back, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe what they did to it. It was so amazing. The separation, I'll get a little geeky here musically, and that you know, strings are supposed to be penned or located in the sonic spectrum in a certain way. Like left side or right side. And I thought we had them really, really spread. And then when I heard what they did, I couldn't believe it. And I don't even know how they did it. And I would love to watch them work someday. But that to me really did it. I was like, wow, these guys are amazing.
Yeah, that would be Anthony Caruso was the main music engineer on Farpoint. So he pretty much mixed the majority. I mean, Jonathan Mayer was always there, as well as Mark Cessnak and Rob Goodson. Those guys were, you know, essential to Farpoint's overall sound. When we sent our demo, I was very proud of the fact that they said, this is pretty much ready to print.
Yeah.
Demo. Like, that was the highest compliment I had. You know, we had ever received on anything. And then to see, you know, after 12 versions later, and then 4 versions of a soundtrack mix, what it ended up as, I mean, it's amazing. When you get, you know, some serious class cooks in the kitchen, they're going to just make some great stuff. Aside from that, I think playing the game for the first time was probably when it all hit me. I just thought it was, in the beginning, it was kind of pitched as a low budget, you know, no one's going to really care about this game kind of project. And it's for VR. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm excited. I'm working for Sony. Woo. You know, but then I got to play it with the AIM controller. And it was mocked up at the time. It was a gun that looked like a toy, literally like a G.I. Joe gun. But man, it was just, it blew my mind. And I was so, so excited to be a part of something that I had never experienced before as a gamer and, you know, in VR or otherwise. And, I remember doing backflips after that little meeting.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Through your work with games and through Farpoint and other, games you've worked on in the past, have you noticed anything different about working on sound composition for video games? And is there also anything unique about working for VR games in particular?
Yeah, I think anytime you're working with media, it's all basically the same. It's all about storytelling. The only difference really is deliverables, and that can be specific from client to client. When we sit down to approach video games, it's just like sitting down to approach a film. It's the same concept. The one difference really is that it has to be extra modular and that there's horizontal resequencing. And that's the biggest and most nerdy thing I'll say in this interview. It just basically means that what you write has to be created in a way that they can pull out any of the parts and it'll still work together. So that, you know, when you're walking through a game, it can be mixed basically depending on where the player is. So it's a lot of interaction between the player and the game and the player and the score. And so you have to keep that in mind. But outside of that, it's really the same thing as writing for anything. It's just good storytelling is always going to win. Steve, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I think there is the non-linear aspect of games in general. When you start a film score, you usually have some kind of locked footage or maybe just one reel that's locked, hopefully, before you do a thing. And I love the way the game started off, where we were writing the tent post pieces, mm-hmm. where, you know, 4 or 5 major concepts of emotional content, like, okay, this needs to be the main theme. This needs to be represent separation. This is representing danger and so forth, and getting those kind of hashed out first was really cool. And then the way it kind of grew from that in a non-linear way, where we were jumping to action sequences and then to cinematic scenes, which were really emotional, one day to the next. When it comes to VR, it really comes down to the mix and the implementation as far as differences. Now you want to stay out of the way of the immersive experience, and as a composer, you got to kind of back off a little bit so you don't, you know, snap that user out of the trance. And I think if anything, it's the implementation that was done by the Sony guys that really cracked the code with that the VR sound, you know, being able to create music that sounds like it's in the world and a part of the world, as well as representing the world without being distracting. And we were always talking about this issue with Sony and Impulse Gear going back and forth, like musically, we need to keep this in mind. And right. If anything affected the composition process, it was probably that immersion concept.
Okay.
Sorry, that was way nerdier than Danny's horizontal sequence.
That's perfectly fine. Good stuff, guys. So what's next for Unified Sounds? You both have worked for a diverse set of entertainment-based projects involving anywhere from film, TV, commercials, gaming, and more over the years. Are there any new types of projects you aspire to work on? Can you share anything that you're working on currently?
Sure, we want definitely world domination, and we're going to keep pushing until we get it. we want to do everything. You know, we want to keep doing what we're doing, keep working with video games, keep working with television. Currently, we're putting together a package for NFL season, which is due in July, and that's going to run through the fall. And then after that, we'll have to work on March Madness and golf. And so that gig is always burning in the background all year long. Aside from that, I'm going to let Steve talk about it because he just hooked us up huge with a television production company today.
Yeah, just got back. I don't know if I don't know if I want to shout it from the rooftops yet until I actually see it on TV.
Right.
But yeah, Knoxville, surprisingly enough, it has a big media presence in terms of content generated out of this town. There are a few pretty good-sized media production companies in town. And, we just hooked up with one of them. And, again, it all came down to deliverables. Like, how do you deliver this music in a way that the editors and producers and the people involved want it? And what is the easiest format for them and all that stuff. And we kind of cracked the code and I think we got it today, but that's just hopefully one of many. I just want to make sure all of us are working and just stay busy. And then when the big things come up, then it's all hands on deck and who knows.
Yeah.
Maybe I can move one or two of them out here.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
So where can we discover more about Unified Sounds and listen to your work online, perhaps?
The website, unifiedsounds.com. Okay. And we've got a Facebook page. And aside from that, it would be personal Twitter stuff. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I think we have Twitter for Unified as well. But I wouldn't go to a SoundCloud thing. We haven't updated that in a while.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think if you go to our personal sites, what is it, Danny?
Oh, Danny McIntyre. Yeah, DannyMcIntyre.com. That'll bring to some fairly recent stuff that I need to update, as usual.
Yeah, same here. Mine is Stephen Cox with a PH, so STEPHEN-COX.com. And all those websites will link you to the Twitter feed, which is probably the most active right now in terms of news and what we're doing. We just found out last night that Farpoint was rated what in the top four soundtracks for VR this year. It was by Push Square, I believe.
Push Square, I'll look that up. Yeah, I noticed you guys have gotten a few press pieces.
Yeah, now we got a great crew helping us out with that. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, both of you. I really enjoyed the interview, and thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Pleasure.